Welcome to This Is Money podcast, sponsored by Charles Stanley Direct. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining me today is Lee Boyce. And coming up, inflation is back on the up. Should we be worried? The experts are predicting a busy housing market this autumn. What makes them so sure? Watch out if you plan on taking your kids out of school during term time. You could face big fines. Also today, we take a look at the winners and the losers over the last decade of the supermarket wars and discuss Tesco's new anti-shoplifting measures. And the truth about AliExpress and the bargain items that are almost too good to be true. Don't forget to stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
Take control of your finances with Charles Stanley Direct. Invest, save, coach, or plan. Using technology where it's helpful and people where it matters. Our website and app make trading cost-effective and flexible. But we're more than just an online investment service. We're here for you regardless of your financial needs or if your life takes an unexpected turn. Your finances, your way. Take control today with Charles Stanley Direct. Sign up now.
Investment involves risk.
But first, down but not out. Inflation is on the up. Well, a little smidge, I suppose, in July's reading from the month before, but it marks the first time the rate has increased since a surprise uptick in December. So is the menace back to haunt us, or is it just a little bump on the road? Lee, the latest readings, what's caused the increase? What will it mean for our money? Should we all be panicking that we're back to the dark days of October 2022, I think, when it reached 11.1%, am I right?
You are right. And I would say there's no need to really panic. This CPI inflation reading was under the forecast that was actually out there. The kind of money was on it going up 2.3%, which sounds like a very minimal difference, but it had some very good market reaction in terms of it was a kind of now 50-50 split as to whether or not there might be another base rate cut in the next MPC meeting. That shifted the kind of goalposts and the mute music a little bit from what was previously going on. But another really key point of this as well is that core inflation, which takes out all of the volatile stuff, was down from 3.5 to 3.3%. And that's been quite stubborn, that inflation rate. So it didn't really kind of panic the markets. There was no, we've seen it in the past over the last couple of years when there's been like a reading that's come out differently to what was forecast and all kind of hell's broken loose. But at the moment, it all feels kind of fairly stable, fairly kind of where it wants to be. Obviously, the Bank of England's target is 2%, and it's been 2% for a couple of months. I don't think they're going to lose any sleep over it being 2.2%. The big contributor that made it go up a little bit is energy prices. Now, even though the Ofgem price cap did come down, it didn't come down as hard as it did a year ago when we had those runaway energy prices and the price cap really did get sliced. So for that reason, it kind of nudged up a tiny bit higher. There's some things that are kind of still quite expensive, still rising. Alcohol's a big one at the moment. Mm-hmm. That's still kind of rising quite quickly. But there was lots of downward contributions, restaurant, hotels, transport, you know, so that was kind of as expected. The big point of this is we are obviously keeping a BDI on what's happening with the Bank of England and base rate and what that means for our mortgages and savings. And I think that's what people care about the most. Now, from a mortgage point of view, we are seeing rates and basically a bit of a mortgage battle going on between the big lenders, big names. This week, Nationwide came out with 3.83% mortgage, which is one of the best deals really that's come out this year. And there's a number of sub 4% mortgage deals are out there. That creates confidence. It creates stability. It means that more people might be likely to move or take a dip into the property market because they're seeing that rates are starting to nudge lower. In terms of savings rates, well, no, it's not totally intrinsically linked to base rate. We have seen some downward movement in savings rates, but you can still get plus 5% just about. So there's still okay deals out there. And of course, and as we point out in this podcast, these savings deals are beating inflation by some distance at the moment. Yeah. And in fact, this week from our friends at Raisin, you can actually get 6.1% with its one of its savings deals because it's offering a £100 bonus, which we have details on the website. Plus 6% in savings. You have to put 10 grand in. And we're going to talk about the property market in a minute, but the kind of way things are going at the moment, I wouldn't be surprised to see mortgage rates come trickle down a little bit lower. Not 1% low or 2% low, but probably 3.5 to 4%. It might settle down and we might start seeing, you know, even higher LTV amounts that you'll be able to kind of get a much better deal than what's out there at the moment.
Where is the prediction, Lee, just sticking with inflation, as to where it's heading next, you know, in the short term, short to medium term?
Obviously, it's always very hard to predict. There are obviously geopolitical things going on around the world in which stuff could happen very quickly, and that could have a knock-on effect to the price we pay for goods and services, and that could have a knock-on effect into inflation. There's other sort of things that economists are pointing out. So, for example, economists at Pantheon Macro are saying that airfares are likely to rebound, which could start nudging inflation a little bit higher. They're expecting inflation to rise to 2.4% in August, and they're pointing also to weak services inflation rises. So there's, it could still nudge a little bit higher, but also we quite often talk about what's happening across the pond, don't we? And US inflation was better than expected, and even though the two aren't intrinsically linked, it kind of, they are in a way. Without them being intrinsically linked, there's a kind of what happens here happens there type mentality. So I don't know. I don't think we're going, there's any expectation for any kind of rapid rise in inflation. Let's not forget, Georgia, you pointed out that 11.1% rate. Mm. I mean, we had some real monstrous inflation rates. And another measure of inflation, which is the food measure.
Yeah, I was about to talk about the food, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's way down. So the real hump in that hopefully is over. But, you know, as we always point out, the prices have come up and it's not like they're now going to start coming down. You know, there are core things that are going in the supermarket basket that are way more expensive than they were 2 or 3 years ago. And it's not, you know, like we're in some sort of mega negative inflation where everything's starting to get cheaper again. This is likely now to be the price point, and we're likely to see inflation hovering around 2 to 3% probably for the rest of the year. That means that prices are still rising, but I think it's good news on the food front. I think the food and the supermarket bill was really kind of hit people hard, and we're going to talk about supermarkets a little bit later in the show, but I think it's having a real detrimental effect on what people are buying.
Yeah, I think it's like 1.5% now, food inflation. Wasn't it sort of this time last year about 14%?
Yeah, I think it went higher than that. I haven't got the stats to
have. And it's high, right. Yeah.
Yeah, it really, I'm sure it was nudging 20%. You know, so it's been really quite meaty, pardon the pun, of just how much food inflation has gone up. So look, there's good little chinks of light in this. And I think, you know, basically you could say that the worst of the inflation is over, but we're not completely out of the woods when you look at forecasts and what economists are saying for the rest of the year. But it's likely to be settled to where it is at the moment, you know, plus a couple of 0.2 percentage points either way, type thing.
Say, the three probably chinks of light. One is, well, we're still within the 2% range, really. Two is core inflation, as you point out. That's how much inflation is embedded, I suppose, into the system. And then the third one is services inflation. That also, I believe, fell. And that's the pressure that's on businesses. That's another thing that the Bank of England will be looking at. The reason we mentioned it, as you said earlier, is what are the Bank of England going to do with interest rates? A lot of savers and mortgage holders will be looking at what happens next with that. But we, another sort of fiscal event that we've got coming up, a budget. So this week was really heavy on financial data, wasn't it? We got inflation, but we also got wage growth figures, employment, retail, we got GDP. Mix it all together, Lee, shake it all about. And if you are the Bank of England or you're the Labour Party, or indeed you're a foreign investor, what are you looking at? How are we looking in terms of the economy, in terms of rule Britannia ruling the waves or something?
Well, yeah, the economy,
I started strong there, and it just left.
Yeah, it started to run out of a bit of steam. It's all right. Kind of, it's
take
all
right. The baton, Lee.
So basically, the economy is enjoying a stronger than expected start so far this year, and the GDP rate of 0.6% in the second quarter followed 0.7% growth in the first. And a lot of that, you were talking about services. Services have kind of drove the expansion, and I think that it looks rosier than potentially what, you know, was necessarily believed beforehand. And actually, it's much better than what people expected. So Jane Smith at ING said that the UK economy is much better start to 2024 than pretty much anyone had expected, delivering a remarkable rebound from last year's dip. So that's a good sign that basically the economy's grown and things are moving and shaking. And then you start to, you know, as you say, you put the ingredients together, inflation's around about the target level. We had that base rate cut earlier in the month. And all eyes again will be on the MPC and what they do next. You know, do you rock the boat and do another cut straight away, or do you hold off? As I said to you earlier, that inflation reading moved the needle a little bit in terms of where, you know, the forecasts are going if there's going to be another base rate cut next month. And actually, it's really 50-50. And it, to be honest, the cut this month was 50-50, wasn't it? I mean, it was a 5-4 vote. Mm-hmm. Andrew Bailey had the casting deciding vote. You know, I think it's going to be tight again in the next reading. And yeah, let's talk about property markets, should we, Georgie?
Yes, terms
of,
quite.
Of what that means. Because I think what people really care about, you know, if you're a homeowner or you're about to remortgage or going to be remortgaging in the next year or two, or you're an aspiring first-time buyer, I think that it's been a kind of funny old time in the property market. And what always gets me, and we were talking about this, I remember not that long ago, because you described the house prices like a cockroach, and that they're not really kind of, nothing's really happened.
Yeah,
I was thinking about this in the column that I wrote this week, because we had the pandemic when it was like there's going to be double digit crashes and blah 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 blah. We had when Brexit, it was going to be, what was that figure that got banded around, like
18%.
18%, 30%. We're just shouting out numbers here, but you know. And then the whole mortgage fiasco when rates went up very, very quickly, very rapidly, again double digit house price falls. None of that has ever really materialized, you know. And there was ONS data out this week that basically showed that house prices are at £288,000 typically, up £7,000, up £8,000 in 5 months since the start of the year, still off the summer 2022 peak by £7,000, but they've been kind of ticking over a little bit higher. So I think in terms of the property market, it's been a very quiet year. Transactions have been way down. But what a lot of property experts are saying is that once sort of September rolls around, there's always a summer lull anyway, because people are on holidays and, you know, not much really goes on. But they're saying there's going to be a meaningful uptick in buyer interest. And I think there's a couple of reasons that make this scenario quite feasible. You know, the election's done and dusted, a new government, you know, a bit of stability. Yes, something might happen in the budget, but I can't see a stamp duty cut or anything that's going to really shake up the property market. You know, we kind of know what they're after in terms of property, and that's building more. You know, that seems to be the real focus more so than anything else. We've been talking about this in the show, but big lenders are making some really decent mortgage rate reductions, and house prices are holding steady. I think you mix all of those ingredients together, and lots of would-be sellers who might have sat on their hands attempting to listing and making a move. And I've got friends that are kind of in that boat that have said to me that they want to move, but they haven't moved because they're worried about how high mortgage rates are. I know for a fact that coming under 4%, if you're lucky enough to qualify for one of those, people will be way more likely, I think, to sort of make that move. And I think at the moment, they're only going one way, mortgage rates. And a lot of that is linked to base rate. And yes, a lot of it is also linked to swap rates, but they're all kind of linked in a way. And actually, I thought that Andrew Montlake, basically he's a mortgage director at Corico, he said, the resilience of the property market over the past year has been notable. The double-digit price falls many predicted simply haven't materialised. Since the base rate was cut earlier this month, and with mortgage rates continuing to tumble, we've seen a surge in demand. We're bracing for a much busier autumn ahead. There was quite a lot of brokers, mortgage brokers, that were saying the same thing. And I was looking through the RICS report, the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors. I do this every month, Georgie, sorry, you know I'm sad. But basically every month they put out a report and it breaks it down regionally, and they have sort of a dozen estate agents from towns and cities across the whole of the country, where I always read it because you can pick up on little stories and little things that are going on, trends that are going on. If you're seeing someone in Newcastle saying this massive landlord exodus because people are worried about a new Labour government, and then someone's also saying that down in, you know, Plymouth or whatever, you start to build a picture. Yeah. So I was looking at Rick's, and actually a large amount of estate agents were saying they're expecting a far busier autumn because basically mortgage rates. And that was what a lot, and there was loads of comments in Rick's saying because mortgage rates are coming down, all of a sudden buyers are more interested. All of a sudden people are listing properties because there's buyers to buy them. And I get the impression that it's going to be a much healthier end of the year. And I have property alerts set up for my local area, Georgie. Hardly anything has come on. It's been a real drip feed. Usually it's a deluge of like properties and you can't keep up with what's being listed. But it's felt like a real trickle this year. So we'll see. But I think, you know, the kind of consensus is that all of this is kind of leading to a busier property market for the rest of the year.
I mean, bearing in mind that we do have a lull now, summer holidays, that sort of thing, people are all away, that we have a little bit of an uptick in September anyway, but they think it's going to be even bigger because of everything you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think a lot of people have held off doing anything, you know, and a lot of it, and a lot of consumer behavior, whether it's biggest purchase of your life, which is usually buying a house, to anything else, is linked to stability and linked to kind of confidence in the market.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be kind of house hunting and then all of a sudden mortgage rates are rocketing back up again. And, you know, if you haven't got something already in place, the whole thing just kind of, it deals in confidence, doesn't it? It deals with kind of like what people are wanting to do. And let's face it, some property chains could be huge. So you need to have everyone kind of, you know, happy with the mortgage rates that they're getting. And it's going to take a while anyway for us to be weaned off the kind of mega low rates that we've been used to. But I think a lot of people kind of are in the realization that a mortgage rate of 4, 3, 4, 5% is a kind of long-term norm. Anyway, so I think we kind of, there's a bit of that going on. Lots of people get itchy feet and want to move and whatnot. And I think once you get people that have been in their homes for a little while, you know, those second steppers or people who are looking to downsize, it unlocks a lot of the rest of the market.
All right then, Lee, talking about summer holidays though, if you are thinking of taking your kids out of school in term time, you might want to watch out because the government is determined to improve school attendance. We know that the previous government were. So parents who break the rules could face fines of hundreds of pounds if they do that in the coming academic year and beyond. So Lee, for anyone who doesn't have kids or doesn't take their kids out during term time, what are the current rules around fines? These have been in for slightly over a decade, is that right?
Yeah, so there's been rules in since 2013 because there's been such an uptick in the amount of people that are taking their children out of school in term time, usually to dodge sky high holiday prices in the summer holidays, in the Easter holidays, in the Christmas holidays. So what people have kind of started to do more so than ever, it appears, is take the children out possibly for a week in normal school time. And probably pay half the price than what they would pay for a holiday at another point of the year, and then just suck up any kind of fine that they're going to get. So at the moment, the minimum fine for parents who take children out of school term time is 60 quid. That's going to raise to 80 quid from this week. I mean, that doesn't make sense from this week because children aren't back in school in England, although I think they might be back in school in Scotland, but you can shout at me if that's not right. Please do get in touch at podcast@thisismoney.co.uk.
Neither kids nor in Scotland, sadly. The Scotland part.
If parents fail to pay the fine, it's going to double from 100. So if it was 220 quid, it's going to be 160 quid now. So, you know, the fines are going up. And then the penalties get more severe the more you do it. And also if you're taking out more than one sibling, so you'll get fined for each child. You get a second fine if it happens within a 3-year period, and that's immediately 160 quid. And then you start talking about being sent to court, and you could get a £2,500 fine. You know, how likely that is, I'm not sure. I don't know if the kind of penalty is enough of a deterrent, even these new rates. The 20 quid rise in absence fine comes, it was 400,000 penalty notices issued to parents in 400, England.
400,000?
400,000 in the 2022-23 academic year for unauthorised school absences. I mean, that shows
you... Is that just holidays, Lee? Or is it... I would love to know whether it's kids that are playing truant and the parents get fined. Do you know anything about that?
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, so 350,000 out of the 400,000 for holidays. So the other 50,000. Yeah. It's the last percentage.
That's blown my mind.
Yeah, it's massive.
I was like, oh no, surely the vast majority of people that take their kids out of school, they don't take them out, it's truancy and da da da. That is enormous.
It's huge. And actually, I was really surprised. My daughter started school last September. And she's very much like, I'm not going to say a telltale because that's not very fair on my daughter, but she very much picks up on everything. You know, she's one of those children that she loves the story. She loves kind of hearing what's going on. And I've been quite surprised because there's been a couple of times she's been like, so-and-so's off to Turkey for this week. And I'm like, no, they can't be in Turkey. It's school time. And they're going to Turkey. I'm like, okay, maybe she's just, but I'm like, that's quite a specific thing to make up. Mm. And then you kind of realize that that child isn't at school that week and they are in Turkey. They come out of a tan and you're like, oh, okay, yeah. So, you know, there's loads of this that goes on because
parents are factoring in the fine as part of the school.
It's exactly that.
It's cheaper, isn't it, to pay the fine and go away?
I'm kind of on the fence with all of this because on one hand, you know, there are some parents that they definitely cannot afford to go on a holiday. You only have to look at the price of holidays in half terms and some holidays to go, wow, look at that. Yeah. You compare a week in August with a week in May or June, you know, the difference can be absolutely huge. And unfortunately, some people have to make those tough decisions where it's like, we want an annual holiday, but we can't afford to go on an annual holiday in a school, in you know, basically summer holidays or wherever, because it's so expensive. And then on the other hand, you can also say, you know, on the pro, not on the pros, because I can't really say pros and cons, but on the side of getting into the mind of a set of a parent, you know, you take your child away for a kind of a trip somewhere that you could argue is kind of educational because you're spending all the time with them. Well, I haven't taken my daughter out in term time, but, you know, for example, we did this lovely trip before she started school where we went to Florence and Bologna, and it was, I think that was an educational trip. You know, we went into some cathedrals, we went into some of the sites and kind of explained some of the Italian history and all of that kind of thing. And I think that actually, if you're nourishing kind of a mind, I kind of understand it a little bit more than a kind of fly and flop, you know, somewhere where you're just going to a beach and not
even
really
then, that's but with parents and family, and
even then you could say that this is kind of physical activity. You're probably going to be like playing football and games and things, and it's time for you to kind of, you know, all get together. And you could say that's as good as you know, what else are getting. And actually, let's face it, you know, sometimes at the end of the school year, you know, you get your children coming home saying, oh yeah, we just watched a film at school today. We remember that when they used to wheel out the TV. Then on the other side, you know, you start taking out children from term time, you don't know what they're going to be missing out on an educational basis, in terms of there might be some crucial bit of information or crucial bit of learning that's been disrupted, and it's very hard to then claw it back. And if you're kind of doing it on the sneaky, you know, not telling the school that they're coming out for a week, it's very hard to say, can you tell me what they're going to be taught next week, because you know, we're going off on holiday in Turkey, so I don't want them to miss out. It's kind of hard, hard balance. So I don't know, my personal viewpoint is I'm a little bit soft on it, just because I know how tough it is being a parent and how expensive it can be to go on holiday. But at the same time, you know, it is important that children are learning, and you know, we're very fortunate that we have a good school system in which, you know, really children should be at school in the designated times. And I think the argument really is for a shake up in kind of term times. You know, maybe parents should be given, and this is me just coming up with absolute ideas on the back of a fag packet.
That's finally.
But you know, something along the lines of a bit of like a bit flexi term, like maybe one of the terms should be a little bit flexi, you know, where you can kind of say, or like a sabbatical, you know, every three years, a child gets a 5-day sabbatical, you know, in order to be able to afford a holiday. I don't know, something like that, you know, could work, could deter some of this. And then at least that way you're doing it in a kind of legal way, and you can ask the question of what they're going to be missing out on so that you can teach them. But yeah, these fines are going up, Georgie. Whether that's going to be a deterrent enough or not to stop the massive stem of this remains to be seen to me, because I think that even though there's 400,000 fines that have been dished out, the real crucial thing is the cost of that fine is still going to be way under
quite
the benefit
until it reaches that level.
Yeah. But they're serious about it, and I wouldn't be surprised to start seeing these fines go up even more. They're basically, these new guidelines say school should consider a fine if a child misses 10 sessions. Now, 10 sessions is 5 days of school. That's the way they kind of like work this all out, without advance permission. I mean, that's the thing. I kind of think sometimes schools are actually quite depending on your headmaster. If you kind of said, look, we're going to go for a week in Italy or wherever, I haven't booked it, but I'm asking for advance permission. And it's, you know, sometimes you have holidays, you have weddings abroad or funerals abroad or that kind of thing. You know, sometimes the schools can be a little bit, you know, kind of understandable. I think it's when people do this on the regular basis and kind of really try and pull the wool over their eyes and just kind of do it. I think that's where headmasters kind of start tearing their hair out. And basically at the school gates, I mean, you hear all sorts of rumours and things going on, and nothing stays a secret. You know, there's 30 children in the class usually. And if one of those children has gone on holiday, it's quite likely that they've been loose-lipped, and then everyone knows about it. And then all the parents know about it. Then all the parents go, well, do you know what? Actually, maybe we should do that. And it kind of like, it breeds more of it. It's like a petri dish of school holidays where children are kind of gossiping about what other children are doing.
That's it for part one.
I'm joined now by Alex Webb-Bowen from Charles Stanley Direct for our weekly Investing Explained feature. Alex, we've got a question here from a listener. I have quite a bit of exposure to the US in my investments. Should I be looking to reduce it? And is there a magic percentage I should aim towards? Alex?
So firstly, it's great that you're thinking about diversification, as investing across different regions and asset classes should be a key pillar in anyone's investment strategy. I wouldn't say there's a magic percentage, no. There rarely is with investing, as it never tends to be a one size fits all. Everyone has different financial goals, investment horizons, and risk appetites that need to be considered. Some advisors do suggest having a maximum of 30% of your portfolio in any single country, but the US markets have been the leading driver in investment returns, given the rise of tech, as we know, but there will always be volatile periods, as we're seeing now. So ultimately, the question comes back down to the risk tolerance, whether you're comfortable with the potential volatility in the US market, or if you would prefer greater stability, then diversifying further might be beneficial.
Excellent. Very well answered. Thank you very much. That's Alex Webb-Bowen from Charles Stanley Direct.
Welcome back. A decade ago, three supermarkets reigned supreme in Britain: Tesco, Sainsbury's and Asda. Fast forward to 2024 and the landscape looks very different. The rise of online shopping and the worsening of economic conditions have all played a role. So you have been looking at it, Lee. Just quickly, why have you been looking at the rise and fall of the supermarkets over the last 10 years?
Yeah, because we're interested in it, George.
Great. You know, that's enough reason to me.
Supermarkets are a massive, massive part of our lives, aren't they? And we had Kantar, the kind of like official measures of the supermarket market share. And we had some figures out from them this week. This basically looks at it from a sort of 12 weeks perspective. So basically a three month period of how they're doing. But what we wanted to do, and what, again, Ang had was doing in the background, was a kind of deeper dive on this. Now, the reason why she was doing a deeper dive on this is because I've read a lot this year about just how badly Asda have been doing. And we did a story, I'm going to say about 6 weeks ago or so, and it really blew up on Twitter. And lots of people were just kind of saying that they just don't use Asda anymore. And kind of it's gone really downhill. Now, I was thinking, OK, that's pretty unfair on Asda. So what is it that's kind of is that actually true? You know, are people really voting with their feet? And I think sometimes you have to look at these things over a longer period of time rather than 12 weeks. 12 weeks isn't a huge amount of time. So what is the shift? We wanted to know what is the shift of consumer behaviours been. We know that Aldi and Lidl are kind of flying. We know that. There's no secret that they're kind of been growing massively. But what I kind of wanted to know is, who are they biting, or, you know, eating the market share of? You know, what where is it that they're getting it from? So that's why Ang went off and done this story. Now, Asda, yeah, I mean, the reading of this, I was surprised. It was deeper than what I was expecting. So it had a market share back in 2014 of 17.2%. That was more than it was more than Sainsbury's. Wow. Sainsbury's had 16.4%. So fast forward to 2024, they've got a 12.6% market share. As that's a drop of 36.5%. That is massive. And then Morrison's has also struggled. It had an 11% market share in 2014. Today, that sits at 8.6%. That's a 27.9% fall. So then I was thinking, okay, that's interesting enough in itself. But Tesco and Sainsbury's surely have suffered quite heavily from Aldi and Lidl. They haven't. I mean, they've had a nudge, a bit of a nudge, but it's not been anything too serious. So Tesco, obviously the biggest supermarket chain in the country and by some distance, 28.8% market share in 2014. That's 27.6% today. For Sainsbury's, it's gone from 16.4% to 15.3%. I think that those two have done very well in the online kind of space. I mean, even me, I was an ardent, won't do any online food shopping. I finally sort of succumbed last year and bought a Sainsbury's pass, one of those passes. I think it cost me £40 for unlimited deliveries on a Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday. And actually, it's been a bit of a game changer, you know, especially with a second child as well. You know, you have all of your kind of core things in. And I kind of realised that I was being a real idiot about, you know, and actually, one of the things that always put me off was, oh, stuff's going to be really close to being out of date and there's going to be loads of substitutions and yada, yada, yada. But actually, on the whole, it's been pretty solid. So then, okay, so they've done all right. So it, for me, then you look at Aldi. So Aldi's gone from 4.8% to 10% market share. Lidl's gone from 3.6% to 8.1%. They've basically eaten into Asda.
They don't do online, do they?
They don't do online. And actually, so in the kind of we were talking to some analysts in this, you know, what happens next in the supermarket battle? Well, you know, this person is saying essentially that Aldi and Lidl are probably going to struggle to get any more market share, you know, because of the online element and because there's not really many more prime sites possibly for them to go. That they've kind of expanded rapidly. They've gone into towns. They're very clever in their strategy, finding the right sites. I love Aldi because you go into any Aldi basically across the land and it's just like an identikit Aldi, like that, the layout, you know, it's just, and I think we've had this conversation before, George, I go into Tesco or go into Sainsbury's and those big mega ones, it's like a labyrinth of like stuff. And I'm like, nothing's in the same, in each store, they're all kind of different layouts. In an Aldi, I can close my eyes and probably been in like 20 Aldis in this country. And I know I can go down the right aisle. It will have fruit, vegetable, chilled. You go around a corner, then you've got that weird middle aisle. You come down cereals and you go around the next day. And it's basically like,
I think I've been in three times in my life.
It's a snake of four or five things.
I can't remember if it was an Aldi or Lidl.
You can do a full shop in half an hour for me. And, you know, even when they pack it a million mile an hour,
that's what I hate. I love it. There's no space to pack, and they're just like it. Speeding down the thing.
It's proper man packing. I just sort of open up a bag and it's coming so fast. I just shove it in. There's no order. I like that, you know. But this guy, I'm gonna tell you what his full name is in a minute when I can see it, instead of just calling him that guy. Jonathan DeMello of JDM Retail is basically saying that they're gonna struggle to keep the growth up, and online is hard for them to do because the margins are so low and the cost of delivery is so high, and because the margins are low on discount products, they're reliant on volume. So it's going to be very unlikely that they'll get involved in the online battle, and if they do, it would probably mean that items would become more expensive. Nonetheless, I think that it's an interesting snapshot of what's been going on. And there's obviously been a seismic shift in where we shop and how we shop. What, I mean, why are Morrisons and Asda losing so much ground? I mean, that Asda drop has been huge. And actually, Jonathan DeMello says here that, you know, Asda has always focused on value. You know, that's Asda price. Remember, you know, it's the tap bottoms with the jingle of the coins, you know. And they've always focused on value, but it's played in the hands of the discounter, aka Aldi and Lidl, who've just undercut them in price. And that's where they really struggle. And actually, if I had to compare Aldi and Asda, I occasionally pop into an Asda near here, but very, very rarely. The produce from Asda is, if you were talking about fruit, vegetables and meat, I find that basically everything Aldi is from Britain. When I go to Asda, quite often a lot of it's, I sort of look in a packet and I go, that's come from where? You know, all the time, but quite a lot of it, you know. So there's a bit of that going on as well. I think also some of these supermarkets have kind of managed to claw back a bit of ground, especially Tesco, by doing that club card. If you go into a Tesco without a club card, you're kind of stuffed type mentality. Same with Sainsbury's and Nectar. people have actually played into it a little bit, I think. Whereas Asda and Morrison's, not really too. My mum's got a Morrison's right by her house. Like, she religiously goes to Morrison's and she has their reward card. I don't know what it does. I'm still not convinced. I don't know what the M&S reward card does.
I don't know what the Waitrose one does.
I don't know what some of them, I don't know. Whereas with Sainsbury's and Tesco, it's kind of quite clear what they do. You know, you can just get discounts. You can take it off the bill or you can put it towards something else.
Yeah, but that's got its own problems, hasn't it?
Oh, it's got its own problems and we won't go down that rabbit hole. But, you know, it's interesting. Actually, the other big one that's done quite well, and I think there was kind of a couple of years ago where Ocado was on a bit of shaky ground and there was kind of, they had all of these like upstarts coming in saying we're cheaper and blah, 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 and it, you know, undercut Ocado. But Ocado's actually held on quite strongly and it's gone up from a 0.8% market share to a 1.8% market share, 55.5% growth, the same as Lidl, exactly the same amount of market share increase as Lidl. Iceland's done all right as well. It's gone from 2% to 2.3%. Waitrose is down 8.8% from a 4.9% market share to the 4.5% market share. So it's a great little snapshot into what's going on. And for me, it's what can Asda do? What's its USP going to be to stop the flow? And actually, we saw Chairman Lord Stuart Rowe said he was embarrassed by its performance and the recent set of results. Sales tumbled to 4.26 billion in the 12 weeks of August 4th, down 6% in the same period of 2023, whereas sales were up sharply at Tesco, Sainsbury's, Lidl. So what do they do? How do they go? You know, he's been in the industry for a very long time.
CEO of M&S, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he is the guy you want to try and shake things up. And if I was going to bet on anyone that could pull it back and figure it out, it would be him. You know, he does have a sort of bit of a Midas touch. It's, but for me, George, I just don't know what the USP is. And I'll be perfectly frank with supermarkets as well. One of the things that quite annoys me is when they say we're matching Aldi on price. You know, that's not why I'm going
good
to
advert for Aldi, though.
Yeah, what's your USP? Like, no, what is it that makes me want to come back in here time and time again? Not just that it's the same price as Aldi. I mean, yeah, I find it bizarre. Anyway.
I don't know if you remember, Lee, but about 5 years ago, someone on the pod predicted, and I think it might have been Rich, suggested that we could see one of the big ones fall. And I think they suggest it might be Morrison's. I mean, not quite failure, but they're not going great guns. Would you dare to make such a prediction? I mean, how do you see the future?
No, I'm not going to make a prediction over, you know, because I wouldn't want to see any of them kind of foul or struggle.
Or succeed, Lee.
Jobs would be on the line. But it's kind of, I think something has got to fundamentally change as the for sure. And to a certain degree, Morrison's as well. You know, they just need shaking up. They need a better USP rather than just being like a discounter cheap on price, because that's where Aldi and Lidl have kind of muscled in. So it's, what are they going to do that's going to be slightly different? What is it? What are their strengths? You know, for example, Asda has George. And George clothing range is incredibly popular. You know, are they utilizing that enough to get bodies into the store to then turn into more of a supermarket spend? So look, I'm not going to sit here and make predictions of any of them kind of going under or struggling, you know, but it is tough when you've got, you know, other supermarket brands nipping at your heels and undercutting you on price.
Indeed. Lee, we're going to stick with the supermarkets because this has money been looking at Tesco's attempts to thwart the shoplifters. And we do have a bit of a shoplifting issue in the country, do we not? Ang has actually been looking at this. She wasn't particularly impressed. Just tell me a little bit more.
So, yeah, I mean, basically, a survey by the British Retail Consortium earlier this year showed the cost of theft doubled to 1.8 billion in 2022-23, with over 45,000 incidents a day of shoplifting. The epidemic of shoplifting has been absolutely huge. I saw on Twitter, there was a Twitter account that had basically gone into a Tesco store in Perivale, which is in West London, and they had put lots of its alcohol behind a locked cabinet, in which you have to press a button and then it kind of waits and then it unlocks the cabinet. I sent Ang up there to go and find out what it was all about. And we'd asked Tesco about it, and they were a little bit cagey over how it works. You know, is it facial recognition? Do you need to have a club card? You know, how much does it cost to put these into shops? How big is the problem, you know, if they're having to do this? And I said, look, let's undercut all that and just go and ask the security guard, because, you know, you're going to get the real story from the security guard and the people that work in the shop. And essentially, they're saying, you know, it's such a huge problem. And you know, it's very difficult because you want to stop the shoplifting, but you can't just have a million security guards trying to stop the shoplifting because it costs too much money. And almost it's kind of like, you know, the losses are probably, you know, easier to swallow than having loads of security guards. So she was kind of unimpressed by this, because you essentially, you went in, you pressed the button, it kind of like swirled, like a kind of waiting thing swirled for a few seconds, and then it just unlocked. And she was like, but if I was a shoplifter, would I not just press this button, open the door and open it up and do it? So she couldn't figure out who was controlling the locking system, you know. And that's why we asked if it was facial recognition, because that would make sense, because if there's notorious shoplifters and they're sort of unlocking that shelf and it's on a facial recognition, they would just surely not open it. But then also, if that shelf's open and someone's in there, what's stopping someone just kind of shuffling next to you and, I'll just leave that door open, mate, and then they're going in and taking it. So it's all a little bit silly.
Is it, Lee, going back to our old friend behavioural economics, I used to have a corner shop that had a cutout picture of a police person in the window.
Yeah, they still do that in like the BM schools, all those kind of places.
Exactly. Is it not just a bit like that, a bit of friction between going, I'm not going to do this? For me, I'd be thinking, I don't know, it would also, and obviously I'm not going to steal anything, but it would make me think twice about wanting to go and buy alcohol, because I think I'd feel like I was doing something naughty. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's definitely a behavioural thing. Yeah, and actually, you're right.
They are looking at us, sort of saying, where's it going to go, Lee? Dystopian future.
And that's what we were saying. And actually, the reason, you know, on social media, you know, basically people were quite incensed by it, you know, and saying it's a sad indictment of the times that we're living in. And it's hard to sort of disagree with that. And, you know, the other thing is, I have seen so much shoplifting in the last couple of months. I've seen shoplifting in the past, you know, very occasionally, but Liverpool Street station. So I should explain that I come in from Essex via Liverpool Street and then Liverpool Street to High Street Kensington, which is where the office is. Liverpool Street, WH Smith and Greggs is just an absolute hotbed for shoplifting. So I've been to that Greggs at Liverpool Street twice. And most recently, I went in there to buy the team some sausage rolls on my way in to work, because that's the kind of guy I am. This guy walked in, opened the fridge, took out a bottle of Lucozade, took a sandwich, took a 4-pack of sausage rolls and just walked out. No, not a blink of an eye. He just, he even took his time a bit, like he was shopping.
Make sure he gets the nice one.
What should I get? Yeah, no, he was comparing the sausage rolls, you know, to see which ones were slightly a bit more browned, I think. And he just walked out with them. And you just think,
wow.
Oh, blimey. And then WH Smith in Liverpool Street, I'm in fairly regularly because like, I miss a train and then I end up just going in there just like pouring over a couple of magazines I'm not going to buy and, you know, just like wasting a bit of time. The last few times I've been in there, honestly, people just go in, they sell alcohol in there, just open the fridge, take a couple of bottles or whatever they want and just walk out. And the WH Smith has security guard, but he just walked off. I've seen it so many times in the last couple of months. I'm kind of like, it's become, I'm not even shocked. I'm not even surprised. You know, it's not even, it's just almost like giving up a little bit. So it's a huge problem. It is a huge problem for all these, you know, businesses to keep up with basically unscrupulous people just going in. They have no shame and they just go and take this. And because really the kind of the punishment for them probably just isn't severe enough. You know, if they get caught, I don't think they really, what happens, you know, how many people have actually gone to jail for shoplifting? How many people have actually been fined? You know, it's very hard. So while it's quite easy to criticize Tesco for putting this in, you know, they're trying to do something.
Yeah,
ban it for you know, the majority of people that, you know, go and obviously do the right thing, aka don't just take what they want and walk out with it. Yeah. You know, and all that does really is push up prices for us normal folk. You know, that's folk that are kind of, you know, not criminals, basically.
Dealing stuff, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, all it does is to put the prices up. So while you might think this is kind of like, not a victimless crime, you know, poor old Tesco making its billions of pounds. You know, fundamentally, it kind of probably in a roundabout way does hit us in the pocket because they probably start putting the price of stuff up that's getting stolen a lot. And it's just, you know, it is crazy. But I don't know what the solution is, Georgie. I don't think this is the solution because I think, although it's friction, I don't think it's a deterrent enough. But there must be a company out there that is like cleverly beavering away at some sort of system in which...
There's going to be facial recognition soon, Lee.
Tesco was adamant that this isn't done by facial recognition.
It will be, eventually.
And it wasn't like we were trying to sort of accuse them of doing it, because my argument is, some of the shops now, you know, we've been pushed to self-checkouts, and you know how I feel about self-checkouts. It's all right if it's a couple of items and you're going quick or whatever. But loads of the supermarkets and Boots are really bad for this. It's that you go and you're just being filmed. You can see your little face up on the screen, and I think it's a complete breach of basically like, you know, what is necessary. So when I go to Boots, I just put my hand, I'm going to do it to you now, George, I just do that.
Yeah.
I put my hand over the screen and I just buy my stuff. I'm not really happy to have my face filmed. You know, I'm not exactly looking my best when I'm putting through a few nappies and wet wipes at Boots self-checkout. You know, I'm probably there in a bit of a fraught state, and I just don't want to be having my face there. So
the stupid thing is, you are the person who's buying it, right? So you're not going into a store and just taking it. You're actually at the checkout.
Yeah, so I'm at the self-checkout. So what sort of security measure is this? What, because you think I guess it's because people like do
swiping it extra
and put a few things in. Yeah, I'm buying one pack of wet wipes, and actually I'm putting two packs.
Exactly.
But some people are, but then again, you know, some people are desperate, and I shouldn't use, you know, babies as an example, because, you know, some people, you know, really do struggle. But, you know, I think what I'm trying to say is we're just so used to being recorded that something like that actually would make sense that it's facial recognition, because you'd have repeat offenders surely on record. You go, oh, you know that guy's face, and I know he goes and shop this. Then you would lock stuff. And then that face, your face would be on it, and it just wouldn't. Would that make sense to me? Not just you press a button and it just unlocks regardless. Like, I don't know. Tesco were not very forthcoming about how it works. And I don't know. We were trying to write a piece where it was just kind of like outlining what supermarkets are having to resort to. But anyway. Yeah,
interesting stuff, Lee. I imagine there'll be more things like that. But talking about prices going up, this is not what we're going to talk about next. We're talking about really low prices. So we know the Temus, we know the Sheins, we know Alibaba. What about AliExpress? That's what you've been looking at.
Yeah.
The bargain items that are almost too good to be true.
So basically,
what's AliExpress?
The rise of all of these websites has been phenomenal, hasn't it? I mean, the advertising on it. I mean, sometimes I'm on Twitter now and it feels like there's just a one continuous Temu ad. You know, even though I've blocked it and said I'm not interested in this ad. And actually, I've been very surprised at how many friends and family have been really sort of hooked into Temu and Shein and AliExpress. So AliExpress is what we've been focusing on this week. The reporter Toby Warne on our sister title Money Mail, he's absolutely brilliant in this type of thing, I should add, got interested in this. And actually, it was a very good piece, because I saw it plastered everywhere in the Euros Championship, and David Beckham has got a £5 million deal to be a global ambassador. Mm-hmm. It's been on a big drive to kind of get recognition, and it's very similar to Temu, to be quite honest with you. And if you're familiar with Temu, it's basically very, 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 very cheap items. I'm really careful what I say here, because I don't want to get in trouble with cheap items cost a fraction.
Well, they say shop like a billionaire. Like,
yeah,
that's their
which
line,
is just,
isn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
the Temu.
Yeah, it's crazy. So Toby set himself a £50 budget. Mm. He managed to get some earbuds for £1.19. He managed to get a smartwatch for £13.47. Got an electric toothbrush for £1.19, a gold ring for £1.19, a smart ring for £8.82, 3D creative lamp for £6.32, and a linen shirt for £9.62. All of it comes directly from China. What I'm kind of interested in, we haven't touched massively in this, but how they are getting away with doing this so cheap. Again, have to be careful what I say. Don't want to start casting, you know, accusations.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, you have to kind of question those prices.
Is the stuff legit? Because, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't want to stick anything in my mouth or in my ears that cost £1.13?
Well, that's it. I mean, define legit. I mean, the thing
is... I mean, is it going to blow up in my... literally in my face?
So let's go with the electric toothbrush, right? So so Toby says here, my old 50 quid Oral B electric toothbrush is on the blink. AliExpress offers white, similar one in baby blue for £1.19. When it arrives, I'm unable to read the Mandarin instructions, but work out an AA battery is required. The £1.44 Duracell battery costs more than the toothbrush. The toothbrush is sized for a child, and the vibration is lackluster and less efficient than if I use a manual brush. Could be handy as an emergency spare. I think the reason why I read that out is that you could probably blueprint that on a lot of the items that are sold in terms of expectations versus reality. You know, are you going to be spending £1.19 on the electric toothbrush and really expecting it to be as good as one that is sold, you know, in a retailer that's a brand? Now, we talk about brands and things all the time. You know, are branded items as good as unbranded items? You know, are some of these things made in the same factories even as, you know, some of the branded ones? Very hard to tell. And that's why I find this phenomenon really fascinating. And what I'm really interested in as well is, like, you know, how much tax are they paying in Britain? You know, how are they kind of circumnavigating all of this? Because you tell me something costs a couple of quid, my mind doesn't go, oh, what a bargain, I'm going to buy that. My mind goes, why is it so cheap? How are they kind of, you know? And then the other thing that I've been quite surprised is, on one hand, lots of people go, oh, you know, death of the high street, death of local shops, you know, yada yada yada. Then they'll happily go out and go and shop on these Chinese websites, which, you know, basically undercut every single shop you can ever imagine in Britain, because it's impossible for a shop to be offering products at this price. And it makes me question the whole thing. Look, listen, if you shop at Temu and AliExpress, do get in touch with us at podcast@thisismoney.co.uk and let us know your experiences. You know, I'm not going to sit here and completely poo-poo it, because if people are buying stuff on here and think it's worth it, then that's their, you know, the choice is there. Just, you know, there's a couple of other things that would make me personally a bit nervous about it. So, for example, buying a smartwatch, I'd be thinking, okay, well, how long is the battery going to be lasting? How accurate is it going to be, really? You know, where's the data going was going to be my next point. You know, downloading an app off of, you know, you can't really read the instructions on. Is it going to kind of overheat if I leave it charging without me kind of keeping an eye on it? You know, does it have the UK kind of, you know, spent the quality mark of, you know, this is properly legit? And it makes me nervous what people are getting sent into their homes. And, you know, as I say, I'm being really careful what I say, because I don't want to kind of get in trouble with AliExpress or any of these other companies. But I'd be thinking very carefully. And I personally just wouldn't touch these websites. That's just not for me. I just think, you know, if I needed a new electric toothbrush, I'd probably go read every single review I could possibly find on Witch or something like that, and then think, actually, I'd rather pay 80 quid for a toothbrush than 40 quid for a toothbrush if it's going to last much better and clean my teeth better. But sometimes you get what you pay for. Where we sign off. You get what you pay for, Georgie.
Well, I was going to say, it goes back to the thing that our nanas used to say, you know, you buy cheap, you buy twice, Georgie.
Yeah, well, there is a bit of that. Also, the comments in this were really interesting. I was actually quite surprised. There was lots of people saying stuff. Can I just read out this one comment? I was really fascinated by them, but we'll leave it there. So this person on here said, the only purchase I've made on AliExpress was a Les Paul electric guitar. Now, Les Paul electric guitars, they are ruddy expensive.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it to be anywhere near the standard of a USA guitar, but it arrived with all of the branding I was after for less than 250 quid. That screams for me that surely can't be right. Surely, like, Les Paul must be on, like, I'm kind of keeping an eye on this, because that's their copyright. I used it purely for experimenting by stripping the electronics and accessories it arrived with and replacing it with different pickups and other parts. The end result is a guitar that looks and sounds like a £2,000 product, but actually cost just under £500 after the premium parts were added. A bloody great purchase. And then someone underneath put, I thought about a guitar from there. Looked like a Strat. Even the headstock had a Fender sticker on it. But I just don't know. But for 100 quid, maybe I'll give it a shot. I mean, I'm like, wow. You know, our big brands. I mean, I didn't really realize that, like, some of this stuff is kind of, you know, mimicking brands. I'll be honest, I haven't been on the website. I'm too scared to even go on the website, Georgie. I'm not accepting cookies. I'm just reading the story off of Tobia. I'm too scared. You know, I just don't want to do it. But, you know, let me know, are there branded products on there that are kind of, you know, and then, you know, as I say, that for me is a whole other story of, you know, I remember like a fair few years ago, there was kind of Chinese companies that were making knockoff versions of cars, you know, and, you know, there's some shops and things that I remember some pictures of shops in China, not official, kind of like your Apples and all of that kind of stuff. Is this bringing it all to life into a UK audience? Because it feels like it might be. And I say, please do let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. This will roll and roll. Right, that is it. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team, anything you'd like them to look into, including all of that stuff related to AliExpress and the like, Lee.
Yeah, you can email us at podcast@thisismoney.co.uk. You can tweet us @thisismoney. And you can also comment on the story which this article and this podcast will live.
And if you like our podcast, why not rate us wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.
Take control of your finances with Charles Stanley Direct. Invest, save, coach, or plan. Using technology where it's helpful and people where it matters. Our website and app make trading cost-effective and flexible. But we're more than just an online investment service. We're here for you regardless of your financial needs or if your life takes an unexpected turn. Your finances, your way. Take control today with Charles Stanley Direct. Sign up now.
Investment involves risk.